Okay, good.
So we are holding.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So we are holding on Yud-Zayin Amud Beis, 8 lines from the top. Line begins Hakoyso. Okay. So we talked about in the thank you. We talked about in the Mishnah the din that you're not allowed to dig a pit near somebody else's pit unless you have a certain amount of distance between them. And we discussed yesterday the two possible reasons, which the Gemara itself is going to take up as we go along. One thing is just the act of digging itself weakens the ground, and the other is that wetness seeps through the ground and eventually can damage the other guy's borer or what have you. So now we have a discussion of Amoraim like this. What happens now? So the Mishnah is talking about, let's say, for example, one person already has his burr in his property. The other one now is going to be making a burr nearby, so we have to leave enough distance between them. 6 tvachim, as we said yesterday.
What's interesting is we don't take into account the depth of the burr.
Some Mephoshim on the Mishnah explained that that's why we're going to eventually talk about why the Mishnah mentioned a number of different kinds of things. There was a Bor Shiach Umayra, and then there was a Amas Hamayim, and Nivrechas, a water channel, and Nivrechas HaKovsin, a laundering pit. Some Mephoshim, some of the Rishonim say that the difference is the Bor Shiach and Mayra, the problem of them is just the depth. Even if they're not filled with water, just the fact that they're that deep. Weakens the ground.
Right.
As opposed to with a nivreches and an amas amayim, since those are shallower, the problem is not so much the digging in the ground, the problem is the water. Yeah. Okay. So.
Especially when you're both depth and water.
Right, exactly. So, habol bismich b'tzad ha-meitzah. Suppose that one of these two people wants to build a burr, wants to dig a burr right next to the property line. Is he allowed to do that, or does he have to remain 3 tvachim in?
3 tvachim or tefach and a half?
No, 3 tvachim, because we said before that it comes out of 3 tvachim. Each one needs a wall of 3 tvachim, meaning there's a total of 6 tvachim between the inside of one burr and the inside of another. So, one guy wants to build his burr right near the edge of his property. He's allowed to do that. Abaya om ha-soymech, v'rova om ha-enesoymech. Abaya says he's allowed to do that. And later on, if the other guy, so he's allowed to do that. Rava says he's not. What does it mean, by the way, according to Abaya, if the first guy put it near the property line, what would happen? Would we say that then the other guy has to then, if he eventually wants to build a burr in his property, he needs to have it full 6 tvachim away,
right.
Meaning the whole 6 tvachim has to come out of his property?
Right.
Or that's how Tosfos learns, for example. Or some other Rishonim learn that, no. All he has to do in that case is 3 tvachim away. He has, the other guy can, he has the ability to say, look, fine, I have to keep it away 3 tvachim in order not to damage your burr, but you put yours right by the edge. You can't expect me to go back in 6 tvachim all the way, to go back 6 tvachim like this. It should have been you left 3 and I left 3. You didn't leave 3. Fine, I shouldn't be obligated to leave all 6.
Can you force him to move the burr?
No, burr is already built. You can't force anybody.
Fill it up.
That would be... So Abaya is saying that he can put his burr there on the end, and later on, if the other guy eventually wants to build a burr in his property, he'll have to move it 3 or 6 tvachim away, as the case may be. Rava says, Einu Semech, that the other guy cannot even lachatchila build his burr too close to the edge of the property in the first place.
And so, if he does,
then he's not allowed to. Then the other guy can validly tell him that I object, and then take him to Beis Din.
Then he'd probably have to fill it in.
So, Besadah Hasuri Laburdus, now we have to consider, if it's a field that typically a burr would be dug in it, for example, Rashi says, let's say it's a field that usually needs to be watered. Let's say it's a field where the local rainfall is not enough for it, or where it's a kind of crop that needs extra rain or whatever. So typically that's the kind of field where you would tend to dig a burr. So if it's the kind of Hasuri Laburdus, Divra Hakol Enesoyma, then everybody would agree you can't put your burr too close to the property line because you have to expect sooner or later the other guy is also going to want to build a burr, is also going to want to dig a burr in his heart. And again, you can't make it that he's going to have to move in the full amount. Ki pligi, the sada she'en asuri laburis. The machlokes would rather be, suppose it's a field, suppose it's a property where it's not usually expected that a burr would be dug in the first place. So in other words, just because I decided to dig a burr in my property doesn't necessarily mean that at some later date you're going to do the same thing. Therefore,
in a field that's not usually designed for burrs.
Nevertheless, I built a burr in mine. You might at some later date decide to build a burr in yours.
Right.
Do I have to take into consideration when I'm digging my burr in the first place that there's a chance you might have to? That's machlokes. Abaya almost so much to hoy nasu laburis. Stop bias says, fine, in that case, you can put it as close as possible to the property line as you want, because it's not a place, it's not a sada hasui labirus, it's not expected the other guy is going to build a burr. So fine, when I'm building my burr, it's not harming you at all. You
the other guy's place,
the other, one or the other, right. That's what we mean. It could be both of them, it could be one of them, whatever. The point is that it's not expected that he's going to be putting a burr over here. So I'm putting my burr over here, not necessarily. Am I causing any am I making you any problem? On the other hand, Rava on the Enu Samach, the Amalei, because the other guy can tell him, look, even though it's a place she'ein asri laboris, ad ki heichid at im lachtav chaparta, but you at some point decided, you know what, it would be a good idea to have a borer here. Fine. And no mami, mam lachtav chaparta. I also want to keep my options open, and at some point I might decide to make a borer here. Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. So that's version number one of them, Achlevis. Now, version number two, ikadami, besada she'ein asri laboris divahakal samach. Version number two is, if it's a place she'ein asri laboris, a place where normally boris will not be dug, then divahakal samach, then everybody would agree, even Rava, that you can put a bur right by it's not designed for boris. It's not the kind of place where typically boris will be dug. Therefore, ikadami you were looking at besada she'ena asurila boris. If the place that's not usually meant for boris, divahakal samach, then everybody would agree I can put my bur right near the property line because we're not. Never mind. I want to keep my options open. That's not a valid enough reason for you to prevent me from going close to the property line. Keep pliggy. Masada has to be laborious. According to the second version, paket, the machlokes is if it's a field that typically a burr would be dug in. Therefore, like this, Abaya almost says, and he says like this, why? Afilo le rabbanan. Now, even, again, we talked before when at the beginning of the perek, we're going to talk throughout the perek, we have over and over again a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim. About cases like this, where one person has something in his property and the other has something in his property, and one is causing damage to the other, or later on Yud Ches Amud Beis, we'll talk about cases where you have each one is damaging the other, whatever. You have a general machloikus, where Rabbi Yossi says that we don't have to worry as much about that, and the Chachamim say you do. But later on, we'll explain exactly what the nature of the machloikus is. So even according to the Rabbanan, who say that, for example, I have a tree in my property, and you have a burr in your property, let's say I want to plant a tree, I have to make sure that my tree is at least 25 amas away from your burr, because otherwise the roots of it will spread out and damage your burr. So even they would say, the difference is that Abonin would say, I have to make sure I'm planting my tree far enough from your burr, because look, your burr already exists. Therefore, I'm responsible. If I planted my tree there, that would be doing something that's eventually going to cause a hezek.
How far is the tree from?
25 amos is about 40 feet. So you're talking the roots typically may extend that far. But later on, we have this certain kind of trees even further. Whatever. Let's not get into that right now. Aval ha'cha be'idnin de'kachafer lesa labur. Abaya would say, in this case, when I'm digging my burr over here, your burr over here doesn't exist yet. It's a sada she'ein asri labur. It's not expected that you're going to ever dig a burr there. Why should it be a problem for me to put my burr there? Even the Rabbanan, Abaya would say, should agree with that. The Rava Amar Einu Samech, whereas Rava would say, no, you cannot put your burr so close to the property line. You still have to leave it at least three tefachim apart.
So Rabbi
he
would say that
Rabbi
do care.
And he would say, even Rabbi Yossi would agree to this, Rabbi says. The Omar, even Rabbi Yossi says in that same Mishnah, he says, no, I don't have to keep my tree far away from your burr. You're digging in your burr in your property. I'm planting my tree in my property. Not my problem that my tree may eventually damage your burr. But in that case, Hani Mili, the difference is, Hossam, over there, the Be'idna, the Kanata, in the case of the tree and the burr, the difference is, Rabbi Yossi would say that, because the Be'idna, the Kanata, less than the Shosh of the Maskul or the burr, because at the time you plant the tree, there's no direct hezek yet. At that time, the roots are not extending 25 amas out. Years later, the roots are going to extend out and eventually damage the burr. But over here is different. If you're building, if you're putting your burr right next to, right too close to my property, Omalei, the other person can argue, komoro moro de komachis, every time you dig, every time you stick the shovel into the ground, komarapis le laaroi, you're weakening my land. You're making it, Rashi says, you're making my land shake, basically, so therefore it's a direct hezek right now. Okay. Or another, shake, yeah, but you, Now
there's a machine, but not.
Yeah, but even with a shovel, you know, it depends on the hardness of the dirt, I guess. So therefore, Rava would say, even Rav Yossi would have to agree to that, because you're causing a direct hezek right now, not something that's going to happen years from now. So yes, it may be a sada shein asur yilabaris, but nevertheless, right now, by you digging in the land, you're still crumbling up the dirt and making it weaker. Yeah. Thus far, the two versions of the machlokes. Now let's look at the halacha is like Rava, as usual, but we still have to work through that. So, Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah. The Mishnah started, Lo yachba adam bur samach l'bur shachaber. A person is not allowed to dig a bur near the other person's bur, implying time of day a bur. Why are we saying you're not allowed to dig your bur? Because the other person's bur already exists.
What is that?
The Mishnah is saying, Lo yachba adam bur samach l'bur shachaber. Time of Ikabur. The implication is, I'm not allowed to, if you already have a burr here, I'm not allowed to start digging a burr too close to here. I have to keep it 6 tefachim apart. But the implication is, Aval Halek a burr Samach. The implication is, if you don't have a burr yet, I would be able to put it right by my property. Well, that's the question. That's exactly what we have to figure out. So fine, according to the second version that says that there is a case when both Abaya and Rava will agree, you can put it next to the property line, namely it's a Soda Shein Asuri Laburis, it's a place where typically Burris are not dug. Well then fine, Masnith in the Soda Shein Asuri Laburis. So fine, our Mishnah would be talking about such a case when you have a Soda where typically Burris are not built, are not dug, therefore if you don't have a burr yet, I'm entitled to put my burr right next to the property line. At some future date, you might unexpectedly decide to build a burr. That's not my problem.
In a case where you are allowed.
Where you are allowed. Right.
And here, we're talking about
Ella lahach lishin adam asada shein asuri laburis sligi. But according to the first lashon that they're arguing, even in a case of a place that is not usually used for burris. Well, then, if you look at it that way, then Abaya can understand the Mishnah very straightforwardly. What is Rava going to do with our Mishnah?
If we say
that even in a place, Rava would always say, you're digging a burr, it has to be at least 3 tefachim from the property line. Well, then what is the Mishnah mentioning? That you have to keep your burr away from your friend's burr, implying only when he has a burr. Implying if he didn't have a burr, it's not a problem.
It would be obvious.
Now, yeah. The answer is Ha'itmar Allah, Amar Abaya, Vitamin of Yehudim, because of Burda Shininu. Okay, but we know already from the previous part of the Gemara, from the very beginning, that Abaya or some say of Yehuda said that the Mishnah does not mean you have to separate 3 tefachim from the burr itself, from the inner surface of the burr, but rather from the coastal of the burr, from the 3 tefachim of the burr. So therefore Rava would say, fine, that's exactly what the Mishnah means then, in other words. My burr has to be at least 3 tefachim away from the coastal burr, but that in turn implies, therefore, that the other person has to have a coastal burr, which is on his property. Therefore, the 3 tefachim has to be on his property. Meaning, in other words, if he didn't put a coastal there, then he's the one who did wrong. So then in that case, the Rava can understand the Mishnah. Coastal means the wall of the burr. In other words, you're not saying, if this is the burr, you have to assume that a burr, when it's dug, always has at least 3 tefachim of space around it, which is considered part of the burr. Those are the walls of the burr. Without that, it would collapse. So therefore, Rava would say that's exactly what the Mishnah is implying. When it says that you can't put your burr near the other person's burr, and actually the Mishnah said that you have to put it 3 tefachim away from the other person's koisel. We said that koisel there means the koisel of the burr. Meaning, so you have, this is the burr, but you have 3 tefachim around it. I can't dig a burr any closer than 3 tefachim from here. Which implies, therefore, that when I made the burr to begin with, it has to be 3 tefachim away from the edge, in order that the whole coastal burr, that whole 3 tefachim, should be on my property.
That's only in a
country. Well, then in that case, the robber would say that's what the Mishnah means. Okay.
With a coastal.
Yeah. Okay. Next. Fine. Then in that case, let's ask. Fine, in that case, then we can look at it the other way around. If you go according to the first Lashon, that is a field where typically burris are dug, then even Abaya would agree, I can't put my burr next to the property line because it's very likely that the other guy is going to want to build one and you can't make him have to give up all that space himself. Well then, if we look at it that way, Masnissin Basada has to be the burris. Fine, then we can understand. If I care, we can say our Mishnah is talking about that it's a field where typically burris are dug. Therefore, when I dig my burr, I should keep in mind that it's very likely you're going to be digging a burr soon. And therefore, the Mishnah is saying, I have to make sure the Hapchila to keep 3 tefachim away from the edge. Because it's the three of the birds. But if I care now, according to the second lashon, if you say that Abaye and Rava are only arguing about a field where typically birds are dug, then we can ask the other way around. B'shlemel Rava Nisa. Well, then it works out very nicely according to Rava. That's why the Mishnah would say in a sada hasuri labirus that you have to keep three tefachim away. El Abaya Kasha, but according to him, either way, you're not obligated to keep it three tefachim away from the edge. But according to the first lashon, not when it's Asuri Labertus and not when it's Ein Asuri Labertus. So why is the Mishnah mentioning Kosel Borei at all? The answer is Amalach Abaya Masnis and Shabor Lach Bevasaka. The answer is that Abaya would answer that. The answer is that the case of the Mishnah is talking about when the two of them want to start digging their burr at the same time. So then it doesn't matter, Asuri Labertus ain't Asuri Labertus. The fact of the matter is, we know there is going to be, the other guy is digging a burr, therefore I have to make sure to keep three tefachim away from the property edge, and so does he, in order that we're not interfering with each other. But it's true, Abaye would say, if it's a place, she'ain't Asuri Labertus, if it's a place where it's not reasonably expected that burris will be dug, then fine, I can put it near the property line. Later on, the guy may decide, that was the according to the first lashon, and according to the second lashon, even if it's a place, Hasuri Labertus, nevertheless, right now, there's no burr there yet, and therefore I don't have to be concerned that later on you're going to dig one. So therefore, the Mishnah can be made to work according to both of them. Okay. Tashma, come, let's try to prove from a braisa. Sela
Habobia died.
Because that's how he has to explain the Mishnah. Otherwise he's going to have a kasha. Because otherwise, why is the Mishnah saying that you have to keep away the kosel shochavere, which implies, like we said before, that kosel burrs to be tefachim, if according to him there's a case where you're allowed to be all the way by the edge?
Now, what they made these burrs for was to irrigate.
Typically for water, yeah, for irrigation, for drinking, whatever, yeah.
Because the burr would catch the...
Yeah, it would catch rainwater, yeah.
Rainwater.
Right. Toshma, come, let's try to prove from a braisa. Braisa says, Sela habob yadayim. If you have the ground in this area where you're digging the burr, is very, sela usually means a rock, but sometimes the Gemara also uses it to just mean the natural dirt. Habob yadayim, which comes in the hands, meaning it easily crumbles or easily can be dug with the hands. You don't necessarily need digging tools. You don't necessarily need a shovel in order to dig it. Soft enough to be dug up by hand.
Wow. Yeah.
No, well, you know, they're talking about soft ground. You would be in principle able to dig. You wouldn't want to because it would be a lot of work, but in principle, the ground is soft enough that you could dig it all out with your hands. The difference is that the Braita says, each one can dig his burr on his side. The one has to put his burr at least three tefachim away from the property line and plaster it, in order to keep the water from leaking out. And the other one also. So there you see, it sounds like we're not necessarily talking about that each, they're both coming at the same time, like Abaya wants to explain our Mishnah. It sounds like we're talking about, even I'm digging my burr now, and you might only dig your burr 3 years from now. Already now, preemptively, I have to make sure to keep three tefachim away. What would Abaya do with that?
Because he says it has to be built in 10 times.
Yeah, otherwise, at least according to one of the Lashonists, we could say that there's cases where Abaya would say you could go all the way for the edge. Yeah. The answer is, Babia Dayim Shiny. Yes, but it's different if the ground is so soft that it can be dug by hand. Then Abaya would agree that you have to keep it three times away all times.
And for Slaster.
So yeah. So the question is, okay, well, in that case, the Ka'orila Mai Ka'orila. Well, then in that case, then Kakeh, then whoever brought this Braisa in to ask the question, what was he even thinking? Didn't he realize there's an obvious difference with Babi Yadayim? The answer is no, Babi Yadayim is Drichalei. He would say that, no, Kakeh, the Braisa is telling, he would answer the reason why the Braisa mentions Babi Yadayim is to tell us a Chiddush. Because he would think, Kakeh, such soft dirt, you would think that maybe you need more room. Kamash Malam, that is the Chiddush, that you're still in that case, you only need three tefachim. But we still had to say, Abaya would say, in that case, then fine, because it's Babi Yadayim, then you do need to leave the space preemptively. Or maybe not, maybe we'd still be talking about where they're coming at the same time.
There's no machlokes that's provided.
No, so in other words, Tosfos explains like this. In other words, there's actually two different gersoyos over here that the Rishonim have. One way of looking at it is Abaya could answer, yes, this Braita is also talking about they both came at the same time. The reason why the Braita has to tell us three tefachim, even though you already know it from the Mishnah, is to tell us tvekev. You shouldn't think it's more than three tefachim in a case like that, because it's softer. That's one way of looking at it. Then Tosfos mentions another girsa that's tvekev. If the Braita is mentioning you only need three tefachim of Bavli Yadayim, that implies, but if it's harder dirt, you don't. And then it's a question on Rava, not a question on Abaya. And the answer is no, because Fakir, Rava would say, the Mishnah has to tell us, the Braita, I mean, has to tell us the Chiddush, that even if Bavli Yadayim, all you need is three tefachim, but not more than that. But yes, of course, according to Rava, you always have to give three tefachim no matter what, whether it's Bavli Yadayim or not.
What's the effect if they have to put plaster?
The Mishnah also mentioned plaster, but the Gemara is going to later on discuss, does it mean you need three tefachim and plaster, or does it mean three tefachim or plaster? Yeah, but okay, still, Vistod doesn't necessarily mean both. It still could mean one or the other. Later, Tosfos also discusses even Vistod could mean or. Yeah. And Tosfos points out another detail that Bavli Yadayim, you could argue that Abaya would say, fine, I agree there's a difference at Bavli Yadayim because the ground is so soft. Sure, as soon as I dig a burr, usually I would say that in at least in some cases you're allowed to put your burr next to the edge. But if it's Bavli Yadayim, fine, I'm going to agree that not, because then the ground is so soft, me digging my burr is inevitably going to weaken your land. Abaya would agree you can't allow that.
Right.
Yeah, but still, so no question from this Braita on either one of them. Rabbi Gershom has yet a different explanation of Selah Bavli Yadayim. He says that it means, are we talking about that there's rocks on the property line there that are naturally there, since Maaseh Bereishis, or are we talking about there are rocks that were brought there in order to make a separation? So the difference is, therefore, if you have rocks that were brought there, they tend to weaken the ground. They weren't naturally there to begin with. Therefore, they tend to soften up the ground, as opposed to not Bavli Yadayim. If they were naturally there from Sheshes and Bereishis, then the ground is sort of used to their presence, and therefore it doesn't get further weakened. That's simple. All right. Fine. Come, let's prove from the next part of our Mishnah. The Mishnah had continued. Marchikin et hagefes, you have to keep away olive pulp, where you press out the oil from the olives, and now you have pulp left. It generates heat when you have enough of it piled together. Vesa zevel and fertilizer, same thing. Vesa melach and salt. Vesa sid and lime. Vesa floyim and stones. All stones, we talk about a few possibilities. Rashi had said it meant stones that are used, the flint stones that are used to make fire, so therefore they outgas or whatever, they give off heat or gases or whatever, and therefore would weaken the wall. The Rambam says stones that you beat laundry on, and therefore water spritzes off them onto the wall, whatever. All those things have to be kept away. They all have to be kept three tefachim away from the other person's wall. Or you plaster them. Here it's clearly or. In the previous cases, we're not sure whether it's or and. Yeah. So, again, time of day, kakosol. The Mishnah is mentioning you have to keep them away from the guy's wall, implying you only have to keep them away because the other guy has a wall. Like a kakosol semech, it sounds like if there's no wall there, you're allowed to put it right next to the property line. Later on, the guy might build a wall. I'm not responsible for that. Question on Rava. According to Rava, you should have to keep away three tefachim from the property line no matter what. No, the answer is like. That's not how you should understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah means kibleka kosel nami lo samach. No, even if there's no wall, you still cannot keep it so close to the property line. The elamai kamash malon. So what is the Mishnah coming to tell us? Ha kamash malon dehani koshel kosel. All the Mishnah wants to tell us is, why should you not be putting these things so close to the property line within three tefachim? Because if the guy ever builds a wall there, they will damage the wall with the heat or the gases or whatever that they give off. Not to say, though, necessarily, that if there's no wall there, you can put them close to the property line. So I can't. Rava would understand the Mishnah to say, l'chatchila, preemptively, keep them three tefachim away, because if later on the guy builds a wall, it will damage it. Well, by the same token. In other words, the point is, Rava would say the same thing with a burr, then. The Mishnah is implying the same thing with a burr. You always have to keep the burr three tefachim away from the edge, because the other guy may want to build a burr, and you don't want him to have to give up extra space in his property. So again, Rava can understand it that way. Abaya can understand it more. Abaya can understand it just as saying, if the other guy has a wall, you can't put your gefes or whatever close to the property line. You have to keep it three tefachim away. But if he has no wall, then you can. It may also depend on the two versions of their machlokas over here. You can argue whether a field is asuri l'burdus or not. You can talk about whether a field is the type where bur will typically be built or not. There's no such thing really as a field or a property that wolves will or will not typically be built on. So any case, it would be a case where a wool could be built there. But actually, according to so actually it would mean according.
So he could say that.
Well, hold on. So.
How could he say that if the Gemara says
that's asuri l'burdus or not? No, 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 because that's asuri l'burdus or not. Here we're talking about wolves. It's a different kind of thing. My point is, and the point is, in other words, that when we have the two versions of Abaya and Rava's machlokas, one is that everybody agrees that you can't be soimach besada asuri l'burdus if we take the view that any property is asuria to make a wool. Then, if we go with that version, even Abaya would have to agree with this understanding of the Mishnah, that you always have to keep your geffets preemptively three tefachim away because the other guy may build a wall. As opposed to, according to the second lashon, Abaya wouldn't have to understand it that way. Abaya would only have to understand it. If there's a wall there, then you can't. But if there's no wall, then I'm entitled to put it there. And if you, at some later date, decide to build a wall, you'll want to keep it a few tefachim away. Tashma, machikim es let's look at the next part of the Mishnah. Machikim es hazroyim v'et hamachreisha v'et mei raglayim in a kozel shalosh tefachim. The Mishnah continues that you have to keep away seeds and plowing and urine. It has to be kept away from the other person's wall three tefachim. Again, it mentions a wall. Taima de'ika kozel. Again, the implication is you're only not allowed to do those within three tefachim of the property line because there's a wall there. Halakha kozel samech, implying if there's no wall there, you can put it close. Same problem, according to Rava. And the answer is similarly like. No, Rava and maybe Abaya also could understand the Mishnah that even if there's no wall there, it doesn't mean you
for
can
sure.
put it that close. What? No, Rava would say you can never put it within three tefachim because the other guy may build a kosel. Abaya, according to the two different versions, either he might say only if, either, again, given that any a kosel could be built any place, it's not like a burr where you have some fields that typically have burrs in them and some not. So according to the version that Abaya would say, I only argue I'm only arguing with Rava in a soda in a soda she'ena asuri l'burdus. Well, fine. And in that case, there's no such thing as a soda she'ena asuri l'kosel. So I'd have to agree with Rava. According to the second version, that even in a soda asuri l'burdus, I'll still disagree because the fact is, when I'm building my burr right now, you don't have your burr yet. Then fine. In the case of a kosel, he could also disagree with Rava on that on the understanding of the Mishnah.
In the first version, we're talking about burrs.
No, in both cases, we're talking about the Mishnah is talking about burdus, but we're asuri l'burdus or not. But I'm saying that distinction of asuri l'burdus or not does not apply necessarily when it comes to walls, because any property is asuria to build walls. Okay. So anyway, so the answer is no. Loi, Rava could again understand the Mishnah. Kileko koytel nami lo samach. Even if there's no wall, you're not allowed to have your seeds or your plowing or whatever within three tefachim of the property line. Ve'elak my kamash malon. Again, what would the Mishnah be coming to tell us? Hakamash malon de mesunta kashal koytel. The Mishnah wants to inform you these things are all also because of the dampness that's going to damage the wall. All these things, Zroyim, you water them, Machresha, Zroyim and Machresha actually is not so much later on. The Gemara is going to talk about different reasons that Zroyim, the seeds, when you plant them in the ground, they crumble up the dirt, they make the dirt more crumbly, Machresha also. Masunta, Rashi explains Masunta as meaning wetness, dampness. Because of that, because Zroyim and Machresha is not, other Mephoreshim have different understandings of Masunta, that maybe it means weakening the soil. Okay. All right, Toshma. Let's look at the next part of the Mishnah. The Eserei Chayim, we said that if you have millstones on your property, you have to keep them away from the other person's wall. Gimel min ha-shechev shein dalet min ha-rechev, at least three tefachim from the bottom stone, which is the equivalent of four tefachim from the top stone, because the top stone is smaller than the bottom one. So therefore, if you have three tefachim horizontal space from the bottom stone to the wall, it means automatically you have four tefachim space from the top stone to the wall, because the top stone is set in by a tefach. If there's a tefach narrow on all sides. So again, the Mishnah mentioned
a wall.
They're round,
right?
They're round, yeah. So again, the Mishnah mentioned a wall. Taima de'ika kosel halakha kosel samach. Again, the implication is only I can't put my rechayim close to the property line if you have a wall, because it will damage the wall. Implying, but if you have no wall, I could put it. Again, akasha and rava. Now, and the answer is no. Same answer as before. Kileka kosel nami lo samach. No, rava could understand the Mishnah as saying even if there's no wall yet there, I'm still not allowed to put my rechayim close to the edge of the property. The elamai kamash malon. So why is the Mishnah telling us this detail? How kamash malon the two yakosha lekosel. The Mishnah just wants to inform us what would be the problem. What's the problem with having rechayim near a wall? The problem is the tiria. Rashi explains that the tiria. Rashi explains tyria means the vibration. You turn the millstones, it vibrates, and therefore it eventually undermines the wall. It shakes the ground, yeah. Tosfos explains that maybe not. Maybe tyria means the noise of the millstones is bothersome, or the noise that damages the wall eventually.
Noise
whatever.
The knee would go further.
What?
Noise could be
but there's a, we talked about yesterday that Achronim say, the Nesivis says, for example, that the Chachamim established, the Chachamim didn't want to make it, for example, what are you going to say? You can't have millstones on your property at all. A person needs to have millstones on their property. A person needs to be able to use their property in the normal way. As long as you put a certain reasonable distance, according to the various amounts that the Chachamim said, then fine. It's going to be noisy, it's going to disturb the other person, fine. But, you know, there's a limit how much we can expect you to do in order to avoid causing hazard to the other person.
That's why today we build foundations for those things.
Walls in those days had foundations too, but still, a foundation can eventually, you have noise happening near it all the time, eventually. It's in here. Okay. So still no question on Rava, but and still no proof to Abaye. Okay, Toshma. What about the next part of the Mishnah? There's a Tanur Shloshim and Akulia Shein Dalim and Asafa. We continued in the Mishnah saying that it has to be at least 3 tefachim from the kulya, which is 4 from the top edge. We said yesterday that Rashi understands that the ovens were shaped like this, and therefore the kulya is here, the safa is here. It's set in one tefach. So again, 3 tefachim here automatically means 4 tefachim here. Tosfos learned rather that they're shaped more like a ball kind of, and therefore the kulya is the fattest part of it, and the safa is the top edge. Either way, same idea.
Really, what kind of ovens do they have?
These were clay ovens. They were made out of clay, and they were made
out of
the time of Rashi and Tosfos. I don't know what kind of ovens they had, but we're talking about the kind of ovens they had in the time of Mishnah.
They certainly had different ovens, and it was mysterious for them as it is for us.
I guess so. Yeah. Anyway. So, again, time of Deika Kaisel. Again, the Mishnah mentions that you have to keep them away from the wall, again, implying only because there's a wall, Halakha Kaisel Summon, implying that if there wasn't a wall there, I would be able to put the oven right by the edge of my property.
A wall next to the oven?
A wall on your property near my oven, right. Then I have to keep it away 3 or 4 tefachim or whatever, but if not, then not. Again. And again, the answer is loy. Rava would say no. He lack a kotel nami loy samach. No, the Mishnah doesn't mean necessarily only if there's a wall there. Even if there's no wall there yet, I preemptively have to keep my tanur 3 and 4 tefachim away in case, yeah? The Mishnah just wants to inform us that the heat of the oven, the hot air of the oven, is likely to damage the wall, and that is the reason why preemptively I have to keep it far enough apart. So that in case you want to build a wall on the property line, then my oven won't be damaging your wall.
Pretty close.
There's a limit how much the Chachamim are going to make you, are going to keep the enjoyment of your property away from you in order not to,
yeah. Yeah, 3 fucking makes sense. I mean,
3 tefachim is
this far apart, you can't hurt a wall.
Sure, you
fire.
Yeah, it depends. We're talking about an oven with a normal amount of heat in it. We're not talking about, you know, we're not talking about something that, it's a clay oven. How hot can you fire it already? Yeah, even 3 tefachim.
For a pizza oven, 3 tefachim from a wall, I guarantee you there's going to be cracks after a certain time.
Okay, but so if you're putting a pizza oven, we're talking about a normal oven over here. Fine. Onward. Tashma. Come, let's prove from a Mishnah later on in our parrot. Lo yiftach adam chanus shal nachtoimin mishal tavoy. A person is not allowed to, that's the next Mishnah actually, a person is not allowed to open a bakery, the Shaltzaboyin, or a dyeing or store for dyeing clothes, both of which there's a lot of heat involved, because like your pizza oven, a baker has an oven which is fired to higher temperatures. A dyer also, he has a vat over there where he heats up the dye stuff. He's not allowed to put such a thing under somebody else's oitzer. So in other words, if somebody else has somebody else owns the second floor and he's using it as a storage area, let's say for wine or what have you, you are not allowed to go on the ground floor which you own and turn it into a bakery or a dyer's place. You're also not allowed to put there on the first floor to make it into a barn for cattle. Again, time of the Ika Oitzer. Again, the implication is, why am I not allowed to do those things on this first floor? Only because you already have your Oitzer on the second floor, and therefore the heat or the smell or whatever it is will damage the things in your Oitzer.
The smell would be?
In the case of the cattle, it's the smell. In the case of the other things, it's the heat. Yeah. Again, Holaka Oitzer of it. The implication seems to be that if you don't have an oitzer there yet, I'm entitled to make my chanus shal nachtoimim or whatever over there. Later on, at some later date, you might turn your place into an oitzer. It's not my problem. What would Rava do with that? The answer is dira shiny. The answer is that that Rava would answer, it's different with a dira. Meaning, in other words, here, all this time we're talking about, Rashi learns like this, all this time we're talking about, for example, in the property, out in the chaser, out in the field or whatever, fine, we can put restrictions on what you're allowed to do close to the edge of your chaser or field or what have you. Here we're talking about a person's house. There's even less limitation what you can make, what you can restrict a person from doing in his own house because it may cause hezek to somebody else living upstairs. To go and say, so far as your own house, you can't make it into a bakery because it may damage the guy upstairs, because at some later date he might build an oitzer upstairs, not our problem. To say, if there's an oitzer right now, you can't do that, sure, that would be a direct hezek. But to restrict him, so Rava would say, in other words, like,
what would Rashi to say about refet?
Same thing. Same thing. Chanus v'refet bakar, dudas and shalotimim, it's where a person lives. Fine, this person,
put cows in
your house. This person decides to live together with the cows, I don't know.
Okay.
You know.
He wanted to make a parnasa.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point is, according to Rashi, what it is Rava would say, it's one thing to tell you, for example, that you need to keep your oven or your rechayim or your meraglayim or whatever to be talking away from the property line in the chotzer. Fine, but to restrict it, even if right now the other guy doesn't have a wall there, but at some later date he may build a wall there. But to go so far as to say that in your own apartment you can't do things because at some later date the guy upstairs may build an oath there, you can't do that. The Rimigasha. That's not my problem. That's not my problem. I had the right to do what I wanted with my jira at the time.
Yeah, he should know already.
So when is it a problem?
There's cows.
Only if, according to Rava, it would be a problem out in a chaser. Or if the oitzer already exists. If the oitzer already exists upstairs, I can't now decide to make a bakery downstairs. But not me. The Rimi Gash has a different explanation of jira shiny. He says it means it's not normal that a person should take his house and turn it into an oitzer. Therefore, you don't have to expect when I make my bakery
right.
or my refes bakar or whatever downstairs, I don't have to worry. Maybe at some later date, the guy might turn his house into an oitzer. So that's not a normal thing to do. Therefore, I don't have to worry about that.
Now, when he says oitzer, you're always thinking about wine?
It doesn't necessarily have to be wine, but I think later on in the mission.
Maybe it
could be whatever. Anything that
something
might
will be ruined.
Anything that might spoil, yeah. Yeah. Anything that might spoil, yeah. And the Gemara says, Zekanami. As a matter of fact, yeah, you can prove that there's a distinction between a dira and any place else, the Tani Allah, because the Braisa continues, Im Hoyser Refes Bako Kademus La Oitzer. If the barn was there before the Oitzer, Mutter, then it's allowed. Well, then that goes to show, like Rashi says, that you can't prevent me from making my place into a Refes Bako because at some later date there might be an Oitzer.
Right.
So therefore, or according to the Rimigash, that you can't expect that an oitzer is going to be made there. So therefore, we see the Braisa makes explicitly that distinction that you're allowed to build the refes bakar over there and not worry that at some later date there may be an oitzer. Not necessarily would that be the case as far as a bor or as far as the other things mentioned in our Mishnah. Tashma, later on in our parak, lo yita adam ilam samach l'sada, a person is not allowed to plant a tree near somebody else's field. I should mention, by the way, as far as Chanus Shal Nachtoimen, actually Rashi says it's not the heat, it's rather the smoke that's going to cause damage. Tosfos says it's not so much the smoke, it's just that the heat is going to cause the damage. Okay. Anyway. So Toshma, lo yuta adam ilon samach l'sdei chaber, a person is not allowed to plant a tree, samach l'sdei, is not allowed to plant a tree near a field, near somebody else's field, elen ken hirchuk men or dalar amas, unless he kept it at least 4 amas away. Not so much the Rimi Gash wants to say it's because of Kilayim. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with him. They say it's not an issue of Kilayim, it's just a matter of you need room, as we learned before, you need a certain amount of room around trees or grapevines or whatever in order for the cattle to be able to go through, to be able to plow around the trees or the vine in order to eventually harvest them. You need that room, so therefore don't plant them too close to the field, because otherwise you'll end up trampling the other guy's field when you go to do those things. V'toni Allah, and we learn on it in a braisa, dalar amas shomu kodei avodas hakerem. That these 4 amas that we're talking about is because you need enough space to be able to work the vineyard without trespassing on the other guy's property. Again, time of demission kodei avodas hakerem. The implication is, why do you have to keep your trees 4 amas away from the other guy's field? It's only in that special situation because you need avodas hakerem. But implying that if it wasn't for that issue, let's say, for example, the other guy is not going to be, let's say the owner of the kerem is not going to be using oxen. Let's say, for example, he's going to be picking the fruit by hand or whatever. So you don't, it sounds like you would be allowed to put it close to the other guy's property. Why? But aren't the on the roots of his tree is going to go into the other guy's field and cause damage. And yet you see that we're not considering that. We're only considering the Avodas HaKerem. And therefore, what does Rava do with that? According to Rava, I should have to keep my tree far away enough that the roots are not going to be going into your field. The answer is Chochab Ma'eskin and Gmaftik Tzunma. Yes, but you know what we're talking about over here is where between the trees and the field there is sunma. There's hard rock. So therefore the roots are not going to spread through into the other guy's rock. So therefore the roots
inside the ground
you have a large rock over there. So therefore there's not going to be any worries of roots going through. The only problem will be the trespassing. So fine, if there's no issue of that, then yeah. There are Rishonim who understand that what the Gemara means over here is, let's say we're talking about that suppose there was rock there at the time when you planted the tree, and later on the rock got removed. Nevertheless, so even though now there's no rock over there, the roots will be able to continue spreading, nevertheless, when I planted the tree, I had a perfect right to because there was rock over there, and therefore we're not worried that later on it was removed. Different other Rishonim disagree with it. The Ramban, the Raivad argue, a number of other Rishonim argue on the various details of that. Is that a valid thing to say, or maybe not? So, okay. Anyway. I think Martha says, Dekanami, in fact, you can prove that to Katani, because it continues, the Mishnah continues over there. Hoya Geder Bentayim, what if there was a fence between the two fields, between the trees and the field, the grain or whatever, then fine, then you don't need any separation. Then each one can put the one person can have his trees all the way up till the fence, the other one can have his grain all the way up to the fence, and there's no problem. Why? Because once there's a fence between them, there's not going to be any issue of kilayim, and we're obviously not concerned about roots. Why? Evidently, because we're talking about that there's rock underground, where the roots aren't going to spread through.
What do we do with it?
No, so that's what we understand it. So we understand that in that specific case, when there's a fence and there's sunma underneath to prevent the roots from going through, then it's allowed. As a matter of fact, actually, the Rimi Gash has an interesting shita on this. We learned back at the beginning of the Masechta that if you have a field, that if you have a fence between a vineyard and a field of grain, that's good enough to prevent kilayim, and therefore if the fence breaks down, we make him fix it, and if not, then it all becomes awesome. According to most Rishonim, even without rock underneath, the Rimi Gash, based on our Gemara over here, has a unique understanding that it only works if there's rock underneath to prevent the roots from spreading through. All the other Rishonim say that no, as long as you have a fence there, even if there's nothing underground, then that's good enough.
Because they
would say that as long as it's visibly separated, then that's good enough. Either roots are going to be mixing underground, not our problem.
Why?
Because the Torah, according to them, the Torah is only answering it when it's visibly mixed above ground.
So kilayim has to be above ground.
Yeah.
Sounds like an interesting talk. Like it.
Okay.
I mean, we learned talking about earlier that if you plant, you have to be certain places between one bunch and other bunch, you know, but if the roots above, the roots hit each other.
If the roots is, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
So you would allow kilayim in a cave?
No. No. Visible meaning of if somebody walks in there, they'll see a mixture. We're not talking about from above ground versus below ground. Anyway, this Dekanami Dekatani, you'll notice, is in parenthesis because of the different girsa over here, which is that not Dekanami, not we're proving from the Mishnah, but rather we're using this question about the fence to ask another question, that if we say that if there's a fence in between, each one is allowed to put their thing on either side. And so the question is, what's happening with the roots? And the answer would be the same thing that we're talking about with the tzunma in between. Okay. Mimar says, Ihochi. Okay, but if you're going to say like that, Ema Sefer, fine, but continue. The Sefer of the Mishnah continues. Hoyer Shosh of Yotzin Besech Shochabere. What if the roots do end up extending into the other guy's property? Ma'amiklan Shloisha Tvachim. Then the other person now is responsible to make sure to, not the other person. The other person is able to dig, the one who owns the field is able to dig out, is able to dig deep 3 Tvachim and remove any roots that are in his property to a depth of 3 Tvachim. In order that it doesn't prevent him from plowing. Plowing is usually 3 tefachim deep. So therefore, any roots that he finds within the top 3 tefachim of the ground, he's allowed to cut off and remove. The e demastic tzunma, if we're talking about a case where there was rock over there, my bohosim, how are the roots getting there in the first place? The answer is hakakama. No, what the Mishnah means is like this: ilav tsunma. But suppose there was a case where there was no tsunma, where there was no rock there in the beginning with, and the person had his tree there, but and the roots therefore ended up extending into the other guy's field, then the one who owns the field is entitled to dig 3 tefachim deep and remove those roots in order that it doesn't prevent him from flowering.
Isn't that obvious?
You would think maybe not. Maybe the fact of the matter is the guy has the tree. I have my property. Maybe at this point, maybe at that point, I can't damage the other guy's roots. No, we're saying he can't. Tosfos points out, actually, a better question is, look, if we're talking about the other guy didn't have any reshus to plant his tree there in the first place, what do you mean I can dig 3 tefachim and remove his roots? He should have to remove his tree altogether.
Right.
So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. First of all, the Gemara is going to later on talk about a case where, let's say, for example, originally the whole field belonged to one person, and then he sold half of it. So imagine, for example, I planted a tree in the middle of my field, near my field of grain. Later on, I sold the grain part, or I sold the tree part. The tree had a perfect right to be there. Yeah. Also,
that's one.
Then Tosfos said the Ritzba, and Tosfos says no, because the Gemara doesn't mention that later. The Gemara mentions a few cases where we have to say it's talking about the Lekeach, it doesn't mention this one. So no, the answer is that the answer is fine. It may well be that he has to chop down the tree. However, in order for the other guy to force him to chop down the tree, he would have to pay him for it. So fine, we're not getting into that level of detail over here. We're just saying if he doesn't feel like paying him in order for the value of the tree, he's still entitled to take out the roots within 3 tefachim of the top of the ground.
Why would he have to pay him?
Because the other guy has a tree, which is it's causing him a loss if he has to chop it down.
But the whole...
Even though he planted it, Shalai Bereshus, yeah. Tosfos on Amud Beis has a long discussion about that also, that it may be that we'll talk about soon, there may be a difference, which Tosfos says, between a hefsed muat and a hefsed meruva. To make a person remove his tree is a big hefsed. Not necessarily should we do that, whereas opposed to smaller things, moving your thing a few tefachim away from the property line, or the various other cases that we're talking about over here, maybe we do.
What was the first answer from Tosfos? I didn't...
The first one is, let's say that part of the field was sold. So originally I had a tree and I had a field, and then afterwards I sold one or the other.
Oh, yeah. So he never did anything.
So he never did anything wrong in the first place. The tree was planted there legitimately.
And you knew you're buying a part of a field.
Well, there's that too, right. Come, let's look at yet another Mishnah in our parrot. It says you have to keep a tree at least 25 amos away from the other guy's bur. Again, time of the ikabur. Again, the implication is I have to keep my tree 25 amos away. If your bur is already there, I have to measure out 25 amos and make sure I'm not within it, implying halakha bur sama. And again, it's a question on rubber. According to rubber, you shouldn't be allowed to plant that tree within 25 amos of the property line to begin with. The answer is like, the same answer as before, yes. If you like a bur, lami like sama. No, rubber would answer that even if there's no bur, you're still not allowed to put it that close. The mission just wants to tell us why 25 amos, because the problem is that 25 amos, the roots are likely to damage the burr. So the mission is not telling you the fact that you're allowed to plant it closer. If there's no burr, it's just telling you why is there a 25 amos limit, because your tree is going to damage his burr if he ever builds one.
And not more than 25.
But not more than 25. Okay, ihachi, if you're going to look, 25 amos is about 40 feet. If you're going to understand it that way, aim a safer look at the next part of the Mishnah, which says, "Vim ilan kadam la yokut." We say there that if you planted the tree first, you're not obligated to chop it down. Well, the idolai samech hechamashkachas la. According to Rava, if you're not allowed to plant the tree within 25 amos of the property line, then what is there a case that the ilan kadam? Mela, according to Abaya, I can plant it on the property line. Years later, you may build a burr. I'm not obligated to do anything about my tree because I planted it there, so it's fine. But according to Rav HaChila, the tree had to be 25 amos away. How is there ever a case where there should even be a hava? I mean, I should have to chop down my tree because it's damaging your bark.
Because the bark that is also going into the roots, going to the other guy's field. You know, so wouldn't be a worrible problem,
we're not so worried about the roots going into his field. Fine, the other guy will chop off the roots that are within 3 tefachim of the ground. Here we're talking about that you have to remove the tree altogether, or not after, whatever, because all the roots are damaging the bark, no matter how deep you're going. That's different. The answer is, Kidomina Papa, be like, hey, just like in the next case that we're going to talk about, that Papa explains, we're talking about a case where one of them bought something to explain how the mission would work with Pointer Rubber, that later on we're going to explain a case that we're talking about where somebody bought something. So the same thing over here, Hakanami Bilakea. Same thing that could be over here, for example, a person planted a tree in his field. Later on, he sold half of his field to somebody else. The other guy goes and digs a burrow in his field. Fine. When I planted my tree, it's still on my property, and I planted it with a shul, so I'm not obligated to chop it down. Tosfos explains a little bit differently. Let's say the other way around. Let's say I sold my tree to somebody else, but fine. Now, later on, I decide I want to dig a burrow in what remains of my property. Fine. You who bought the tree, fine. The tree, nevertheless, it existed with a shul. You had a perfect right to have the tree there because there wasn't any burr yet. Now that I'm digging a burr, it's not your problem that the tree exists there. You bought it legitimately. Okay.
So you can't tell them
to move the tree. Right? Okay. Toshma, come, let's bring yet another proof. Another missionary in our parak gives other examples of things that have to be kept apart. You have to keep away. If you have a pit where you soak flax, that has to be kept far enough away from the other guy's vegetables. Because when you soak flax, we learned this in Brahma Matsya, you soak flax so that the stems rot away, and then you can take out the fibers, but they rot away and it stinks very badly. Yeah, as a matter of fact, for example, in Halacha, in Brachas, for example, we say that it's one of those places where you can't learn Torah or say words of tefillah near it because it stinks. Yeah, the water like that is going to percolate, is going to seep through the ground. It's going to damage the other. It's going to damage the other guys. It's going to give the vegetables an off taste. So you can't do that. You also have to keep away, if you have in your feet, if you have leeks planted in your field, you have to keep them far enough away from the other guy's onions, because otherwise, again, they not so much smell, but the leeks sort of like they leach the same nutrients from the ground that the onions do, and therefore makes the onions not be, it takes away some of the sharpness of the onions. That's a chardom and advertim, and you have to keep away mustard plants from bees. Mm. So Rashi explains the problem is because what happens, the bees come and eat from the mustard plant. The mustard is sharp. So it ends up then, therefore, the bees now, they need to get rid of that sharp taste in their mouth. So they end up eating some of their own honey. So therefore, you having mustard plants near my beehive is causing, therefore, that my bees are eating some of their honey. Other Mepharshim have other explanations of it, that it's if the bees eat from the mustard plants, then it first of all damages the mustard plants themselves. We'll talk about that on other days. But also the honey itself gets an off taste. Exactly.
Honey mustard.
They try it once and then they never try it again. That's what some of the Mepharshim say. But still, that one time is enough to give an off taste to the honey. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
And they're kids, you know, they'll catch up my mustard, even if it's me.
Okay. So, again, time of the Ika Yerek. The implication is, why do I have to keep my Mishra away from the property line? Because you have Yerek already growing, and therefore we don't want to cause trouble. Haleka Yerek Samach. Haleka Yerek Samach. And again, of course, Rava will give the same answer. Like a Yerek Nami like Samach. No, even if there's no Yerek planted there yet, I'm still not allowed to put my Mishra too close to the property line. No, the Mishnah wants to inform us. Why are you not allowed to keep these things together? Because a Mishra will damage Yerek and creation will damage Psalim and so forth. Yes, the Mishnah is giving us the reason why, not telling us that you, if it weren't for that, you would be allowed to put it close to the property line. No, it's telling you why preemptively you have to keep it far away. But again, if you're going to understand that, no. Ihachi, yeah. A mistake, fine. But look at the next part of the Braisa. Rabbi Yossi Matur B'chalder. Rabbi Yossi says it is allowed to have mustard near bees. Because the owner of the mustard plants can say, Ad sha'ata omerli, you're arguing you need to keep your mustard plants away from my bees. You, Reuven, who own the bees, are arguing that I, Shimon, have to keep away my mustard plants, keep them far away, because otherwise the bees' honey is getting damaged. Adaraba, I'm arguing your bees are causing me damage also. Because they're coming and eating the lugluge of my plants, of my mustard plants. What lugluge? What's legluge? Because the Tosfos says Rashi says legluge means the flowers. The Aruch says it means the seeds, And Tosfos says, it means the young branches.
Hmm.
Yeah. So whatever it is, the bees, and whatever it is, it's causing damage. Now, the Idolai Samach Hechamashkafafla. Again, according to Rava, how would he understand the situation in the first place? If according to him, preemptively, you have to make sure that your Mishra is however far away from the property line, and same thing with your creation and the same thing with anything else, how do you ever have a scenario where Rav Yossi would be saying that there's a situation where one of them can say, you're causing me damage, you're arguing I'm causing you damage, but you're causing me damage. That's how Rashi learns it.
So what was the answer to Rava?
Well, we have to give the answer. One second. That the answer is Amar Rav Papa b'lekeach. Again, Rav Papa will use the same answer as we used before. That we're talking about where it was purchased. After the one guy made a mishra in his field, or planted mustard over there. Afterwards, he sold half his field to somebody else, and the other guy planted yerek or put bees or whatever. So at the time when he bought it, at the time when he made it, it was legitimate. There was nothing there. Yeah. Tosfos has a long discussion about the you can see over here Tosfos, but Eloy Samach has a long discussion about the ins and outs of this, among other things, that you can argue that there's a certain distinction, for example, between digging a burr where immediately, as we said before in the Gemara, immediately you're digging the burr, you're digging already is directly causing a hezek, whereas over here, not necessarily is it an immediate thing. It comes only later. And there's other distinctions also. There can be, for example, again, there can be a difference with a tree, for example, with Hesed Meruba to make the other guy chop down his tree would be a big loss unless you compensate him for it, as opposed to telling him to move his bees or his mustard a little further away. There's not such a Hesed yet. Okay.
And if he has a whole field of mustard plants.
Okay, so you make sure that your mustard plants don't start at the edge. Start at a couple of tefachim in, whatever. Okay. Fine. Then the question is, Ibn Lekeach, my time is at Abanon. Okay, but if you're going to say that your situation is where one of them bought, where somebody you sold half the field to somebody else or whatever, why would the Abanon be disagreeing? Why would the Abanon say that you can't have your, that why indeed would the Abanon say that you can't have your mustard near the bees because it's damaging their honey? Well, my time is at Rabbi Yossi, after the Mishra of Yaakonami. And also we have to understand, why is Rabbi Yossi disagreeing only in the case of the bees? By that logic, he should be saying the same thing by the Mishra and by the creation also. Fine. When I made my mishra, it was legitimate because later on I sold half my smil. You can't make me take away my mishra, which existed there legitimately
at the time.
Yeah. So the answer is Omer Ravina. So Ravina will answer because no, we have to bring in a new concept that we haven't talked about before. We talked about it in Bava Metzia, but we haven't learned it in this sugya yet. That the Rabbanon will hold that the mazik has a responsibility to remove himself. Meaning, yes, he may have made the thing birushus, but nevertheless, now it's causing hezek, and then Abanon will hold that, therefore, he has the obligation to move it.
So the mazik can become,
he's not the nizik, he's the mazik, for example. He has his mishra where the stinky water of it is damaging the other guy's plant. When he made his mishra, he was perfectly entitled to, because of the lekeach. Nevertheless, now that it's causing hezek to the other guy's plant, that Abanon will say he has an obligation to do something about it. Move his mishra someplace else.
But the other guy stopped it after that.
Doesn't matter that Abanon will. Okay, so I'll tell you, there are two different girsos that the Rishonim have of it here. The girsa that we have in front of us is that Ravina, that we say Omer Ravina, means Ravina is not arguing with everything that we established so far. We are talking about the Lekeach, so we are talking about he put up his mishra birushus. However, that Abanan will still say, nevertheless, because now your mishra has become a mazik, because the other guy has Yerek over there, therefore you have to move your mishra. There's a different girsa that a number of Rishonim, the Rimigash and a number of other Rishonim, have that says Ela Omer Ravina. The Ela makes all the difference. It means Ravina is saying, forget about everything we tried to find for Rava with so far. No, the answer is that Abanan are only going to hold as a problem in a case, for example, of a burr, where directly when you create the burr, you're immediately causing a hezek over there by weakening the ground or whatever. They would not necessarily say, in all these various other cases, they wouldn't necessarily say that there's an issue with putting it on the, which means that according to that understanding, everything that we were saying on Omer Aleph, that in each of these cases, Rava would say, you have to put it l'chatchila, three tefachim or whatever it is, away from the property line, because later on, the guy may build a wall over there. Now, according to that, if we say, Ela Omer Ravina, it says Ravina is saying, never mind all that. Rava will agree that in all those cases, you can put it close to the property line. Only in a case, like a burr, where l'chatchila is causing damage the moment you start building it, only then would the Rabbanon say that you can't, because al-Mazik l'ayach l'kabat. So
that's what Ravina holds.
That's what that would be. If we say Ella Omer Ravina, it would mean that Ravina says that. If we just say Omer Ravina, we have it in the Gemara, it would mean Ravina would still agree with everything we said thus far. But he's saying that the reason why then that Rabbanan, the reason why that Rabbanan say, even when you did it, Bereshus, even when you sold part of your field to somebody else, nevertheless, now you become a Mazik, and therefore you're responsible to get rid of it. Well, then the implication is Rabbi Yossi evidently is disagreeing and saying that the Nizik, that against the Rabbanan, that it's the Nizik's responsibility to remove himself. In other words, for example, in the case of the Mishra, I have a right to have my Mishra here. It's damaging your Yerek. Fine, plant your Yerukas further away. The problem with that is, I feel a Mishra of a Yarkanami. Fine, then why is Rabbi Yossi Taka not arguing in the case of Mishra and the Yerek? Why is he only arguing in the case of the bees and the mustard? According to him, the same logic should apply. I had a Mishra here. I was entitled to have it. I sold part of my field to you. You decided to plant Yerek in it. Why is it my problem?
He should argue in all the cases, exactly.
No, let's say that Rabbi Yossi does hold. Again, we're going to be revisiting this throughout the parish. Let's say for purposes of discussion now that Rabbi Yossi does agree that the Mazik has to remove himself. However, what it is Rabbi Yossi in this specific case of the bees and the honey is arguing to the Rabbanan like, Tenach Mishra V'yark. Okay, I can understand. I can agree with you when it comes to, for example, a flax soaking pit. Tenach, I can let it go. I can agree with you when it comes to a mishra and vegetables, the hani maski hani bahani maski hani. Because the one way has it. The mishra is damaging the vegetables. The vegetables aren't causing any problem with the mishra. Elod Chardol's wrote it, but Rabbi Yossi argues the case of the bees and the honey. They're each damaging each other. Each one. The bees are damaging the plants by eating from them, and eating the leaves and whatever, or the seeds or whatever it is. And the mustard is damaging the bees by making them eat their own honey or by giving it an off taste. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi would say only in that case am I saying the one has just as valid a claim against the other, which is another one of the points that Tosis brings up over here is. Are we saying, therefore, that each of them, does that mean, therefore, Tosfos discusses, that maybe we would say in that case that according to the Rabbanon who hold the damage that the bees are doing to the plants is not considered important for reasons we'll talk about in a second. Therefore, the owner of the bees is the Mazik, the owner of the plants is the Nizik. Therefore, according to the Rabbanan, the one who has the bees would be responsible for making sure that the entire distance there has to be between them is on his property. Whereas Rabbi Yossi, who argues that they're damaging each other, would hold each of them has to give away half the space. If, let's say, the amount of space you need between them is, let's say, 3 tefachim, and each one is going to have to give a tefach. The Rabbanan holds, for reasons which we're going to see in a second, that the damage that the bees are doing to the plants is not considered really damage.
Right.
So they hold that it's a one-way damage. Right. Rabbi Yossi is holding a two-way damage, namely like this. The Rabbanan would answer back, Dvorim l'chazal l'maskulay. No, because the bees don't actually damage the mustard plants. Ibevinsa, are you talking about, you're thinking that they might damage them by eating the seeds? L'mashkulay, they're not going to be able to find the seeds. They're inside the pods. No, what?
Earth.
No, not inside the earth. No. Mustard grows above ground, but the seeds grow in pods. The seeds grow in pods, so the bees aren't going to be able to break open the pods and eat the seeds. Ibetarpa, are you worried about...
They break them?
Apparently not. Ibataifa, are you worried about Rabbi Yossi? Are you worried about that the bees are eating the leaves? No problem. Hodder party. I don't know, but whatever. The leaves grow back. Hodder party, they grow back. And therefore, Mephoshim say, so that's not really considered a damage because the actual seeds themselves stay intact. And they're protected, yeah, and the leaves grow back fast enough that it's not an issue if the bees. So not a special case, but therefore, Rabbi Yossi, in other words, Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan, according to this way of looking at it, are not arguing on the principle of who is responsible to remove the hezek. They're arguing on the practicality. In a case like this, is it a two-way hezek or is it a one-way hezek? Rabbi Yossi says it's two-way, and the Rabbanan says it's one-way. Okay, so now the question becomes, is the Rabbi Yossi ala mazik v'achak atasnai? Okay, but are you telling me Rabbi Yossi holds that the Mazik is responsible for keeping his thing away, that he agrees with the Chachamim on that principle? Well, it's not, but we learn later in our Mishnah again in the case of the burr and the tree. Even if you had your pit there before I planted my tree, lo yakut, the one who owns the tree is not obligated to chop it down. Because, okay, you dug a burr on your property, I planted a tree on my property. You're the nizik. Fine, I'm allowed to plant on my property if it causes you a hezek. Eventually, then you move your bow. Don't make me cut down my tree.
In other words,
he holds the nizik is responsible to remove himself. Yeah. The answer is no. Ela la'olam Rabbi Yosi ala nizik spirele. No. Let's go back then. We'll say you're right. Rabbi Yosi does hold as an underlying principle that ala nizik la'hachakata.
Not the man.
So why does he only argue with the Chachamim in the case of the bees and the mustard? Why not in the other cases? Because we'll dream that Rabbanan. But he's saying, according to your own shitta, why don't you agree with me in that case? To the Rabbanan. He says, Libby D, as far as I'm concerned, al nizik v'hachkasafma v'afila mishra v'yakul v'yarachuki. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the nizik is responsible to remove himself from the scene. Therefore, even in a case of mishra v'yarach, even when it's only a one-way hezek, you have Yerek, it's getting damaged by my Mishra. Fine, move your Yerek, it's not my problem. My Mishra is in my property and I have a right to have it there. Ella, Mishra is the flax token pit. Ella, but even according to you, Damritra ala Mazik, you say the Mazik has to remove himself. Fine, Tenech Mishra v'yakar, Dani Maski Hani v'anale Maski Hani. Fine, I can understand your Svara when it comes to a one-way hezek like that. You're saying, ala Mazik, fine, it's a one-way hezek, the Mishra is causing damage to the Yerek, therefore you would say that you have to move the Mishra. I don't agree with you on that, but I can understand your Svara. But when it comes to mustard and bees, it's a two-way hezek. Why don't you agree that in that case? That's the answer. The Rabbanan answered. The answer, no. That mustard and bees is also a one-way hezek. Not you're thinking it's a two-way hezek and therefore the nizik should be responsible. No, it's a one-way hezek. Because again, Iba Binsa, if you're worried about that they're going to eat the seeds, they're not able to find them because they're inside the pod. And if you're worried about that, they're eating the leaves, hudder party, then they'll grow back fast enough, and therefore there's no real damage to the plant. So therefore, we also hold that's one-way hezek, and therefore we follow our shitta, that when it's a one-way hezek, the mazik has to remove itself.
That's
halacha. That halacha is like a rechamim. By rights, today should have been chof. We're not going to do it, but at least let's try to get a little further. The Mishnah says, So the bottom line is, we finished with the machlokes of Abaye and Rava. The bottom line is, the halacha is like Rava, as it usually is. But the bottom line is, we're saying, according to the different possibilities, there's a few different things. When you're talking about a house, there's much less latitude to tell a person you can't do something in your house because it may eventually cause damage if the other person decides to do something upstairs. In a chaser or field, we have more latitude in it. Again, if we say the gear says ella amar ravina, then it comes out basically that only in a case where making the thing directly causes a hezek at that time, or your chaser. But if you did it birshus, then you're always allowed to keep it there.
Before.
If you had it birshus, for example, the case of lekeach. If we don't have ella amar ravina, then we'd say that no, even in a case where you have it birshus, nevertheless, the chachamim would say that if your thing eventually causes hezek, then you're obligated to remove it.
What's the kedayim?
The prevailing version, I think, is without the Ella. So in any case, even where it was Virushus, as long as you're a Mazik, you have to remove it.
You mean the way that we've been learning it?
The way that we were learning it, yeah. Yeah.
What happened in Ligluge?
So we said there's a few different possibilities. So it's just said what Ligluge are. It means either the flowers or the seeds or the young branches.
So in the end, we don't use the word Ligluge, and we say, what do you want to say? The seed? No.
Yeah.
It's
so maybe the Chachamim themselves weren't sure what Rabbi Yossi meant by Ligluge. The Mishnah said, "V'lo nivrechas akovsin kolo." The Mishnah had said another thing you're not allowed to have near somebody else's property is a pit. Is a pit where you wash clothes. Now we described them. We described when we learned the Mishnah. Nivrechas means a pit. Means a shallow pit where you have water over there where you wash clothes. So we talked about in the Mishnah. Rashi had explained there in the Mishnah, which we're going to see in our Gemara, that there were two pits that they used for washing clothes. One of them they'd soak with clothes together with dog poop for a couple of days, and that would. I guess the bacteria, I don't know if it was bacterial action or fermentation or whatever would help remove some of the dirt.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
First.
You can be very thankful for modern day detergents. Yes. Anyway, that was.
Why don't you get my detergent tonight? So what?
Oh, just wait.
Yeah. So that was stage number one. Stage number two is after it's soaked in that for a couple of days, bacteria had their chance to do their work on it and fermentation and whatever, then they'd move it to another pit where they would rub them and scrub them and beat them and whatever, and that. So that's the second pit.
Which, how do they take they remove the odor?
Maybe they walk around
everyone,
and smell
everyone
each
walk around the same odor.
I guess
smell.
They
didn't.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah, could be. All right. So, which pit are we talking about? Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Bavur, Lo Shono Elamen Machamtsan. Our Mishnah, when it says that three tefachim is enough, is only talking about from the first pit, from the fermentation pit. That, when you have three tefachim away from somebody else's wall, is enough that there is enough that that the wetness or whatever is not going to damage his wall. Avam in Anadyan. But when you're talking about the pit that's used for scrubbing and beating and whatever the clothes, water spritzes out from that.
Yeah.
Therefore, you need much further. Dalet amos. Then you need four amos away from the wall, because otherwise water is going to go from that and then damage the guy's wall.
Not much water that's spritzed out.
There's enough when you're beating out clothes. Think of when you put clothes in the dryer, how wet they are when they come out of the washing machine. And this is, they were soaking in a pit. They were even wetter than that, yeah. We learned similarly in Ebraisa, Nivrechas Akovsin Dalet Amos, that a Nivrechas Akovsin has to be four Amos away from the other guy's wall. What do you mean four Amos? Well, Hanan Tanan Gimel Tvachim, don't we say in the Mishnah three Tvachim? El Alav Shmami Akadid Rav Nachman. Obviously, we have to accept Rav Nachman's distinction.
He says four Amos.
Is it three Tvachim for the fermentation pit, and four Amos for the washing and beating pit?
The spin
cycle, let's say. Taninami, again. Sorry. Yet another version of this discussion was that they started out with a sira, not like we have the first version where Rav Nachman made a statement, and then we see how it fits with the Mishnah and the Braisa. The other version is they started with the seeming contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa and resolved it using Rav Nachman. We find that a lot of times in the Gemara. So Tanan, we learn in the Mishnah in Nevirachas Akovsin Gimel Tvachim that a Nevirachas Akovsin only has to be three Tvachim from the other guy's wall. V'hanan V'hatanya Abamis, but we have a Braisa that says you need four Hamas, and we answer it by saying Amar of Nachman Amar Rav Abba like Kasha Kamin Amachantin Kamin Anadyan. Rav Chia, and yet another version, Rav Chia Breder of Ibya Masni Lavehebi. Rav Chia Breder of Ibya taught more explicitly. He taught the Braisa saying as follows: Elim Ken, or maybe the Mishnah, Elim Ken Hirchet Misfat Mechamsa V'Lakoyso Gimel Tvachim. He actually had a version of the Mishnah that or a Braisa that said explicitly that the fermentation pit has to be three tvachim away from the other guy's wall, implying, but the spin cycle pit has to be further away, four amos, like you said. Then we said Vesod Bastin. Yeah. So Mishnah continued Vesod Bastin. The Mishnah continued that you plaster them in the case of the Bur, the Shiach, etc. So we have the question. Vesod Bastin Tnan or Juma Oisod Bastin Tnan? What is it? Does the Mishnah mean to say that you have to keep them three Tvachim away as well as plaster them? Or is it one or the other? Either three Tvachim away or you plaster them. Incidentally, by the way, when we talked about the beginning, we said there's two different reasons that Rishonim give for these various things, why they have to be kept away. Is the essential problem the wetness, or is the essential problem that you dig up the dirt and therefore it softens it, and therefore it can weaken the foundation or whatever? Plastering helps for the wetness. The ones who say that the problem is the digging the dirt, they would argue that plaster also helps stabilize the ground. So therefore it works for batching. So which is it? Is it one or the other, or is it both? So the Gemara says, "Pshita deVesod Basidznan." We have to obviously say that it means both. That you have to keep it three tefachim away and plaster it. Deisakadat the oisod basidznan. Because if you were going to say that it means one or the other, imkain la'avinu v'lasninu, then the Mishnah should have combined together. The Mishnah started mentioning Bor Shiach Umayra and Amasamayim and Nevirachas Akovsin, and it said you have to keep three tefachim away v'sod basid. Then you had another list where we said Gefet, Devil, Melach, Sid, etc., which have to be kept away three tefachim oisod basid. If in both cases it meant one or the other, it should have just combined them all together, list all eight things together, and then say, or let's say Vesod Basid.
Maybe you want to plaster one to plaster the other?
No, the Lachora will. No. So the answer is Dilma Mishum Bledomi, Hayahazeka. No, because you could answer that maybe the Mishnah puts them in separate categories, not because one you have to have plaster and the other one plaster is optional if you don't want to have the distance. Maybe the reason is the Mishnah is just keeping them apart because they're two different kinds of damage. Reisha Hazeka de Masuna. In the Reisha, the problem is the wetness. In the case of the Bur, the Shiach, the Myra, etc., the problem is the dampness that seeps through the ground and can weaken the wall. Sefer has Eka the Hevla, whereas in the second list, the Gefet and Zevel and so forth, the problem is the wetness, the problem is the heat. So maybe that's why the Mishnah is keeping them apart, but not necessarily to say that in one you must have distance and plaster, and the other one is either distance or plaster.
Heat for some months.
Heat for Gefet, for example, olive pulp, when you have it piled together after you squeeze out the oil, it develops a certain amount of internal heat. Tashma, Rabbi Yehuda, Mesela Habab Yadai, and come a proof from a brisa that we learned before. We said that if the ground itself is soft and it can be dug up by hand, each one can still dig his burrow on his property. Each one has to keep it three tefachim away and plaster it, implying time of debab yadayim, implying why do you have to have, and there he's clearly saying rizod basid, and you have to plaster it. And besides, the brayta is, well, we would assume, time of debab yadayim, the implication is why do you need both three tefachim and the plaster only because it's soft dirt? Holoi bob yadayim loy, implying that if it's not soft dirt, you don't need both. The answer is no. Who had dinda afgab deloy bob yadayim? Not necessarily. You could say the braisa does not mean to distinguish between bob yadayim or not, soft or not. You could say, ada afgab deloy bob yadayim nami sod basid. You could say, even if the dirt is not soft, you still also need sod basid. Or bob yadayim is tzrichale. However, we would be saying that the braisa specifically needed to mention bob yadayim. Stock that achmina came into bob yadayim. The boy rav chatzfei. Because like we said before, you would think since it's soft dirt, maybe you should need more than three tefachim. Kamash malon, and that would be the chiddush that even in that case, or you need a three tefachim. But not to say that only in that case you need plaster, and in the other cases you don't. Lamaisa, most well, so that's one way of looking at it. The Rambam paskins that you need both the three tefachim and the plaster. Because he says, we started, Mefoshim on the Rambam explained, because the Gemara started off by saying, it's pshita that it means that the sod basid. We slogged it up, because we said not necessarily, because the Mishnah may mean to two different groups, one where the problem is the dampness and the other one is the heat. The Rambam would say that's a dichur. That's okay, the Gemara is just using that as like to swat away the argument. Not necessarily to say that's a valid counter-argument.
Because
he starts by saying pshita, and then pshita.
Maybe
the Mishnah is separating them because of that. But so therefore, there are other Mefarshim who say that no, the Rambam paskins that way, not so much because of the Mahalakha Gemara, but because since the Gemara leaves it as a suffix, well, if there's a suffix, whether you're being magic, the other person, you got to make sure, and not causing the other person a headache if there's something derived after all. So therefore, you have to be on the safe side and put the plaster.
Not causing a headache is derived,
sir? Sure, you're not allowed to cause another person a headache.
What does it say? You have to be careful.
First of all, it's part of the Rechuk Amorcha. But second of all, you have various dinim where the Torah tells you to be careful with the other person's property and money and whatever. In terms of Hezek, also. I mean, the fact that the Torah, for example, tells you that if your shur goes out and kills somebody else's shur, that you're responsible, or that if your fire goes and that you're responsible, all of those imply that you have a duty to guard and make sure that your actions don't cause Hezek to somebody else. Should we try? Anybody have the head for one more sugya? Maybe we'll get to the bottom of your testament, Aleph. If not, then tell me.
Okay.
All right, so maybe.
I think we're kind
of okay, I think we'll leave it for tomorrow then, fine. All right.